I'm delighted to welcome, on your behalf, Ken Clark. Well, thank you very much for that generous introduction, and very glad to be here to get the reactions of the audience, as well as to give my views of my reactions to the budget. And I think I've just about connected with the fact that I am in Edinburgh and addressing this particular audience. I therefore guessed when I came in that you were killing a little time, as I was 5 minutes late, and that I wasn't wandering into your imminent enthronement, and that no strange ritual was taking place of the kind I was engaged in yesterday. But I have had a rather extraordinary experience of being plunged from this rather fascinating, very moving ritual in St. Peter's Square to the House of Commons to hear a very difficult budget being given by one of my successors. And I heard it presented the first time in detail this morning to the Cabinet. We always have an early morning meeting. Now listen to the speech again. I'm certainly digesting it myself, and I've got a team of people with me who keep trying to brief me on where we are. But it's actually interesting for me to be in Scotland and in front of a Scottish business audience and to see what your reaction is and to hear your opinions, because I think what you would like to do, certainly what I would like to do, is have a question and answer session and discussion after I've given my first reactions. I sometimes tell George that I envy him being Chancellor of the Exchequer at the time he is, because I do like three-by problems, and he's a Chancellor of the Exchequer at the most extraordinarily interesting time since the war. No one has faced a financial and economic crisis of this kind before. I think he thinks I can't possibly mean that. I think he would have preferred to have been Chancellor at a somewhat easier time. But the fact is, this is his midterm budget. This is, you know, getting the job done is quite a challenge. It's a fascinating challenge, and he's got two more budgets to go before we get to the next election, and he's probably got several budgets to go before we get ourselves finally back to normality, to normal growth, and I hope to having a modern competitive economy that can continue to compete with the competitors we're going to have over the next few decades, and mainly Asians, more than the ones we're familiar with. So, and I thought today he did very competent job. It was actually a very impressive budget. He's one of the few finance ministers in the Western world, actually, Western democracy. He's one of the few who's lasted, of course, the last 2.5 years. He's one of the few who actually is still in command of the direction he's going in. He's not provoked a crisis. He's not still has confidence in the markets, and he still is sticking to a course, which I believe is the correct course, of actually steadily getting back to a level of deficit, of the balanced budget eventually, so we can start to repay a little of the stock of debt, getting down to conditions which will enable growth in the economy to proceed. And I look at what he inherited, I look around the world, it is quite a remarkable achievement. I think, going back to the catastrophe of 2 or 3 years ago, I think I would have given a bet that the British were likely to get in a deep, deep, disastrous mess, certainly before the Italians. I'd have said, you know, the Spanish might do a bit better than us. I'd have put good money on the Greeks, the Portuguese going belly up, and the Irish were obviously going to have a very, very hard time. But after that, United Kingdom, Spain, Italy, you know, I think the general international view was they'll be lucky. The other two are in a mess, and we're in difficulties, but we're not in a mess, and we still retain the confidence that we require. And the reason is that we are steadily, sustainably, getting our deficit down at a sensible level. I keep being asked, as have been Spice Guy, why haven't you hit your forecast for this year and that? And I haven't been terribly nailing my flag to the mast of the forecasts they're making in the future. You make the best forecasts you can. We get an independent OBR to come in and make these forecasts. But everyone in the OBR, common sense to realise, that in the present state of financial crisis, the idea is you're going to hit every figure absolutely on the dot is fine if you know exactly what's going to happen to the Eurozone economy over the next 2 or 3 years. If you know exactly what's going to happen to the American economy, if you know the Chinese are going to have a soft landing, you know what's going to happen to commodity prices. Anybody in this room who claims he can answer all those three questions and give a perfect description of the global economy she can live is actually an idiot and should not be responsible in any responsible business. We have managed to go on a course which we must continue of cutting public expenditure and getting the deficit down and stopping the growth of our stock of debt at a steadier level than most of our competitors. I was told of the dreadful, heroic politics of the austerity into which we are thrusting the country. Well, actually, we ain't going as fast as most of the equivalent countries in the Western Europe. The Dutch and the Germans are just as tough about it. That's not as tough as ours. But the French are cutting expenditure much more severely than we are. And they're tackling their deficit problem. And unlike French, we had a Greek problem when we took over. The deficit of over 11% of GDP is pretty serious. To an ordinary member of the public, to take over from a government spending £5 for every £4 it was taking in revenue is fairly serious. To have a situation where of the working age population, 40% were receiving more in benefit than they were paying in tax. Every job created for the previous 10 years have been in the public sector. Public sector pay, public employment numbers, public sector pensions have all been racing ahead at an utterly unsustainable level for our children and grandchildren. Gordon Brown would have made a quite splendid finance minister in Greece if he'd lasted. But we have taken over a problem, and George today was able to describe what we're doing. Maintaining the same pace of getting the public finances under control. Faster would actually have a more constraining effect on growth if we had to go faster. If we lose confidence, we'll have to go faster. That would be very troublesome. Going slower, people begin to think we've lost our nerve, and you know, as bad as the IRS of them, can Western European politicians really handle these things, and we'd start fluttering. So we're paying the same rate. So he did announce actually a slight step up. I've no doubt to the light of my colleagues who, unlike myself, are now responsible for great departments, and he was going to take some more out of their current spending than he had actually previously forecast. It's £11.5 billion we're aiming at in the current spending round. It was going to be 10 in the autumn statement. That is so he can put some money into capital expenditure, more than he intended to do so, because we have actually been, ever since we got in, trying to do something about capital expenditure and also about infrastructure, the desirable, more economically beneficial forms of spending that you need at a time of recession. And that's coming along all right. The previous government, I didn't blame Alistair, and Alistair just wasn't allowed to do anything by his prime minister. So what he did do was pencil in huge cuts in capital expenditure, which we implemented, but we've been easing it ever since. And actually, capital expenditure in this decade is, now it's a stage on plans for Dugan, capital expenditure in this decade will be higher than it was in the last decade. And I spent half my life attending meetings on how to speed up the implementation of major infrastructure products. So I think it will be well received by the markets. We will keep that confidence that we have won, and we're going to have to just settle down for the next 2 or 3 years in delivering it in a sensible way with a sensible public spending round, getting back to what is sustainable in the basis for a future healthy economy. We have an industrial strategy. We keep giving more money to Vince Cable, and the Department of Business keeps being highly financed. I again spent some of my time working on the business bank we announced last year, which is one of the ways which we've got to continue to try to tackle one of the major, major problems for growth in this country, which is the availability of finance for small, medium-sized businesses, startup businesses, growing businesses, which is still not good enough in this country. But we're also putting more money now into key areas of the economy, having the right sort of link up with things like aerospace, and which is very relevant to Edinburgh and Scotland, which again is all being announced and financed today, and more to come along. Now, so that is the basis of the sort of fiscal content, really,
of the budget that we have. On monetary policy, we have a change of the Bank of England coming along, and we haven't settled a new remit. George has got to set a new remit, but he's made it quite clear that A, we're not abandoning the inflation target, B, we're doing what actually reality has made us do for a very considerable time, which is actually be more realistic about the time within which you meet your inflation target and to have definite regard to other key things like the rate of growth in the economy and unemployment levels or whatever it is that when we've got the new governor eventually emerges as the target. It's been announced today is there is going to be a look at monetary policy. The more you're got control of your fiscal policy, the more tight your fiscal policy, the more you're actually on course to get back to fiscal discipline, then you can look to your monetary authority and say, look, in these difficult times, this unorthodox monetary policy, we're going to have to keep that going, and the next thing we're looking at is the precise remit of the bank. So fiscal policy and monetary policy will be together, and then we have various supply side measures that we're also taking. Housing is one of the things we definitely wish to stimulate. Amongst all infrastructure spending, have a proper level of house building not only is highly desirable socially and we'll do something about our substantial housing problems, but it also is an extremely good way of stimulating an economy in our present condition. And the house building industry, the construction industry certainly needs it. It's a valuable source of activity and borrowing. And the funding to lend has had an effect on helping the mortgage market, but it's still not produced an adequate level of sales, not shifting things quickly enough, and not building enough. So what we've announced is this extremely interesting combination of things, a very dramatic extension of what we already have. This shared equity scheme for first-time buyers. We had schemes applying to new buy, we had schemes applying to first-time buyers, we had restrictions on them. They've largely gone, and the shared equity is obviously a way of getting, at the moment, the very difficult part of the market underway. But it's so difficult for people to get the deposit and afford the house and get onto the housing ladder at all. I hope will be a considerable help. And the mortgage guarantee scheme, which the details are being devised, but we're certainly going to guarantee for a time, and be careful not to get stuck into long-term systems of mortgage guarantees. You get out before you get into another housing bubbles. But he's built that into the budget as well, saying government will need the approval of the Bank of England to extend it after 3 years. But right now, we need people to get the mortgage finance they need, hence guaranteeing some part of that mortgage. We think will have a highly beneficial effect to try to get the housing scheme going. To help not only house buyers but consumers generally, I think it's very important that we've been able to accelerate achieving what we wanted to achieve, and to be fair to the Liberal Democrats, they particularly wanted to achieve, which is getting our tax threshold back to what is a sensible level, actually. Start paying income tax at 10,000 a year, would have been regarded as rather low two or three generations ago. We're actually lifting huge numbers of low-paid people, Scotland and the rest of the United Kingdom, out of income tax altogether by moving to this higher tax threshold. Has a good underlying economic point, in my opinion, as well. Low-income people spend their money. They need to, because they're all very high-pressed. If you want to just make sure consumption is encouraged, if you can afford to actually raise the tax threshold and give that amount of relief to the lower paid, you will find it has some wider beneficial consequences to the real economy as well. But because of the state we're in, George has had to concentrate quite rightly what he can do on the business world and on employment. Because this has to be, above all else, a budget for the real economy, getting it back in health. So corporation tax, taking that down to 20%. I think it was 28% when we came in. We're taking it down to 20%. That requires keeping your eye on the ball. We get more votes by giving away other things, but we don't. Business taxes are going to come down. I think we'll have the lowest in the G20 at 20%, far lower than the Americans, far lower than our continental rivals, and it should be an attraction to investment in this country. It's a very important move. You look at the personal allowance being raised to £10,000, corporation tax coming down to 20%, that's all very helpful to the business environment, in my opinion. And then there's the step he's announced on employers' national insurance contributions. The £2,000 that will be given, I forget what he's called it, I've only heard this budget twice so far, but we £2,000 off the employers' national insurance contribution. Now, if you're a major employer, you may not be too excited about that. The vast majority of employment in this country is with little one-man businesses. It's shops, it's bars, it's restaurants, it's guys who've got one or two people working with them. And I think it's about 45% of employers, I've got a Treasury official here somewhere, who cease to pay any national insurance at all. Employers' contribution as a result of that move. And that's the level at which you stimulate employment for perhaps the less well skilled and trained, perhaps the really young. That is the kind of economy in the shops and workshops and towns and cities of the United Kingdom where you can actually help a lot. The tax burden on business and on employment has also been targeted in this budget. So you may gather that my reaction was pretty good when I came back from my uplifting papal visit and discovered what George had finally decided to do when I got to cabinet this morning. It went down pretty well in the House of Commons. I always find, of course, you give a budget on the day and everybody spends their life trying to take it apart for the next few days. So far as I'm aware, having been on an aeroplane most of the time since it was delivered, market reaction I would expect is pretty good. I don't think anybody is going to start reacting badly to this. I think he deserves a good market reaction, but you never know what the devil's happening in the markets elsewhere, so sometimes it's quite difficult to single things out. And I go back to where I started. I think we're lucky to have been able to form a coalition with a proper majority. I think we're lucky to have been able to sustain Parliament into supporting a definite, purposeful progress towards what is absolutely essential, the only precondition for getting back to growth and normality, tackling the deficit and debt. The number of supply-side measures we have is quite enormous. One thing to do with business bank is actually putting together all the different business schemes we have. Half of you here, I suspect, would benefit from business schemes which you've never heard of. We're trying to find ways of actually having a one-stop shop and actually making the kind of support we've been trying to give to business more readily available, and also to get rid of the things that aren't working and put more resources into the ones that are actually some good. But this government is the most business-friendly government we've had for a very, very long time. It's had to be a business-friendly government because we're just coming out of the longest, deepest recession that the United Kingdom has known in any of our lifetimes. And if you look around the world, there ain't no shortage of problems. You wonder which country next is going to go up in flames. And that's made a terrible pig's ear of the sorting out the Cypriot banking system. So riots are on the streets of Cyprus at the moment. The Germans are looking forward to their first period of probably little negative growth as their markets, upon which they're so dependent, as they're so locked into manufacturing exports, are beginning to be affected, and the United Kingdom's doing pretty well. And as we sail through this storm, I think George Eithorpe still shows every sign, keeps his nerve, knows what he's doing, has a sense of purpose, and in my opinion, unless you're one of those who did believe that somehow the new government should sort it out by Christmas, or you think right now you should sort out the present government by Christmas, sort of in some magic way. As Mr. Abe seems to be telling the Japanese, Mr. Abe is going to do some Japanese, but you'll find it's a long, hard struggle, I think. They've been 12 years in the doldrums. So I think we're doing pretty well, and I commend this budget. Then I look forward to seeing what your reaction is. If to think I've been over-impressed, over-optimistic. I think not. But I'm interested to hear what your particular challenges are. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ken, would you share Ken's view that it was Pope Francis yesterday and Pope George today? Did he do a good job? Ladies and gentlemen, questions, comments from the floor. We have microphones. Put your hand up and we will move around the room. Yes, gentlemen here at the front, Jenna. Could you hold the microphone? Yeah.
The Chancellor said that most government departments were to cut their budgets by 1%, 1% over the next 2 years. Can you seriously embark upon a cost-cutting exercise for only 1%? I was discussing this with our colleagues before we came in here. I mean, you wouldn't embark on such an exercise without a target of 10, 15, 20%. Seriously.
Well, seriously, some departments have done that. I mean, there are activities where you can. This is on top of where we've already got. I mean, I agree, if you were running a business, if you were running a manufacturing business or something, obviously, when you have to make cost reductions, you tend to work far more dramatically than that. But then your output is a product. What you're interested in is saving your bottom line. There is just, you've changed the method by which you produce, and you perhaps delay the management or something. It is altogether, it's not an exactly analogous comparison with changing people's welfare entitlements or major public services. But to give you some examples, I was justice till September. We're taking about, I think it was 36% out of the justice budget, and the police budget is, no, 26. The police were 23% being taken out, I think, and no government's ever taken a penny out of law and order in my lifetime. They always compete with each other to spend more on it. And to do that whilst retaining public confidence and, you know, make sure crime keeps falling, so on, is not quite comparable with taking costs out of a business that's got into trouble with its competitors. And if you look across the field, we have large areas. One of the real debates we have, which is, you know, is going to make this quite a difficult thing, is that we have to exempt certain areas. Now, we've been very, very mean about what we exempt. People don't like our exempting overseas aid, but if we allow more countries to collapse and to be taken over by terrorist organisations, you'll soon find a modest 0.7% is perfectly worthwhile paying. And it's not a big item in the whole thing, but health, we're all getting older. And the pressures on health are quite enormous, and it's so dramatic and political and emotional that it's a hell's own job to control health expenditure. And of course, people cotton on to the fact that they're to have irresistible, inevitable rises of about 4% in demand each year. Saving them from cuts is not making for a life of bliss. You are having to reform the health service more drastically than you otherwise would do in order to make sure they can actually cope with those demands without deteriorating the service. And there's no area of the public service more resistant to change than the health care system. That's by defence why politicians are so much more cautious and don't come up with the kind of figures that a major company would come up with if it found itself in an equivalent crisis. But some departments have made enormous cuts, and every one of them, if you read your newspapers, is regarded as the end of the earth by some lobby or other. And again, we see the background where there's a lot of free money before. Part of public service isn't collected. We think we have the smallest civil service that we've had for very many years, a decade or a few. The number of public servants is down by about 300,000. Their real terms pay is being squeezed, their pensions are being reformed, and again, justice, it was the senior management. You know, 15 directors became 3 and heads of department.
it's quite tough stuff. And actually, before the present crisis, if you'd said to any British politician, or actually any Western European politician, that a government could take on cuts of the kind we've taken on, and you would have been told you're politically mad. You know, no one's ever going to be able to do that. It's not something in the real world you could contemplate in a parliamentary democracy. So we're doing it, and we're not going as fast as those. The others are having to go faster because they've got the wolf at their door, and the crisis has either hit them or is about to hit them very quickly if they don't get on with it. We are steadily, very firmly, getting down the take. I think we're down to about 45% of GDP being taken by the state now. Too high, far too high. But we're going to get down to 40%, and then things begin to get back to a bit more like normality.
Okay, thank
but
you.
There are lots and lots of lobbies who will be telling us that, you know, women and children are being massacred as we go on with all this, and this is the end of life as we know it in a civilised world. And when people start carrying on about how much it is, I do tend to say, of course, these are all figures far bigger than I was, Chancellor. We've probably got back to about halfway through Gordon Brown. That's where we've got to now. And we've got further to get back.
Thank you, Ken. Douglas Kinnaird, just in front. I assume you had your hand up there.
By now, there should be some other questions. I filibustered that one. Yeah. I see.
I'll take a couple of questions. Do you have one, Douglas?
I'm deliberately going on late. It's a big question. Why don't we go further?
Any more hands?
You have mentioned a number of countries and been critical of what they have been doing, and other countries are critical of what we did. Do you see the politicians of the future being more sensible economically, or do you think we are going to have another generation of people taking us into what the Italians have done, the Greeks have done, and what Gordon Brown did?
Okay, can I...